Hello.
Echo. Welcome to Section 119, the Aggie Radio Sports Show, where we talk anything Aggie sports. I'm Daniel Hansen, joined here by
Trevor Porath
and Jaden Johnson. I wasn't sure if Trevor was going to go before me or after me, so I waited.
That's always an awkward pause moment there. Anyways, we've got a great show lined up for you guys. Going to be talking a little bit of softball here in a second, later on some tennis, and then spring game was the big news of the week, as much of news as that can possibly be, I guess. So we'll get talking to that, share all of our spring game hot takes, so stay tuned.
My only spring game hot take is that we need better concessions.
Dude, you didn't
but
like...
we'll get to that.
Okay, we'll get to that. I saw some tantalizing concession prospects.
Well, nacho cheese on nacho cheese Doritos sounds pretty good to me.
Yeah, I mean, you gotta admit, like, if you're if it's okay, we don't have any 8 o'clock games this year because they released the schedule fully today.
I believe we still have one.
You still have one? Okay. Boise. So that one game, when it's midnight and we're just like, you know what, I'm sad that we just lost by 40 to Wyoming, then we can be like, oh hey, you know what would make us feel good right now? Some greasy nacho cheese on nacho cheese chips.
So we'll talk the Utah State football schedule, as they've released some details about
this homecoming game and most about, like, the afternoon dates.
Yeah,
and stuff.
What time of day the games are going to be in. We'll talk a little bit about that and the spring game, as Daniel said. But football's still a long ways away. And let's start with some sports that are actually going on right now, which there's some really good success going on. Like, this spring has been so successful for Utah State sports, between softball, men's and women's tennis, some
track.
People exceeding all expectations in track. Yeah, some really good stuff. So, and gymnastics, of course, how could I forget? Let's start off with softball, who I believe, especially after a little bit of a fall that the tennis team took, and we'll talk about that, but bumping them out of position that they were in, I believe that the softball team has the best chance, and not just like the best chance, but a really, really, really good chance to bring home a Mountain West title this year.
Right now, after, again, we'll get to tennis in a second, but after their stumble, I would say softball is definitely the best chance we've got right now for a conference title, just because you look at what they did this past week. Having a home game, home series with Fresno State, and taking that pretty much puts them in the driver's seat. If they win out, it's theirs. And there's going to be a couple teams in the conference, which we'll have to like watch out for, like Boise State maybe. And
we've already played them and won the series.
Yeah. So, I mean,
setting the table.
It's the inside track right now.
Yeah, setting the table for what like the Mountain West Conference softball outlook is. Fresno State not only won the conference last year, they won every single one of their games except for their very final game of the year against UNLV. So they only had one loss in conference play last year. They've won something crazy like 14 out of their last 15 Mountain West series. Utah State hadn't gotten a series against them since 1992. And the Aggies went in, got two wins on Friday. Sunday they were set to play again, but that didn't happen just because all that weather and snow and crap. But, I mean, so they earned the series victory for the first time in 25 years. And Trevor and I were both there. Exciting games as well.
Yeah, it was especially that first game was more of a pitcher's duel. It was, you know, they'd get people on, and then all of a sudden all those people would be off three outs, you know, no runs scored.
Six and a half out of seven innings, it was scoreless. I mean, we were at the bottom of the seventh inning, still scoreless, 0-0, and like two, three hits for each team.
And yeah. that's pretty rare for softball to be
yeah.
like that.
Yeah, and especially for Utah State softball. They're averaging 6 runs per game, one of the top in the country. And Fresno State's way up there as well. Both teams just phenomenal pitching, though. And it kept it really low scoring.
And then in that first game, you know, there's some good defense to me, you know, and the bases are loaded, the ball's hit, and the shortstop tags the runner out and then throws it to first with one out to end the side. You know, that's some pretty good defense right there to have the knowledge to tag this runner first and then throw it to first. That way no one can score because that gets the three outs.
Yeah, so that game came down to the bottom of the seventh. Utah State, I believe, had two hits the entire game. And Serena Jaramillo steps up, nobody on base, one out, smashes one past the fence, game, 1-0. So maybe it doesn't sound like the most exciting game, but it was actually a pretty fun one to watch. And then after that, in the second game, Fresno State goes up pretty quick, 4-0. And it's like, wow, that's, you know, that's almost insurmountable. This was after like four innings, I believe. And they're up 4-0. And, you know, after only getting three hits in the first game, that seems insurmountable. But then they make a pitching change, put the freshman Kelly White back in. She holds strong, and Utah State wins the thing 7-4. So, two very fun games to watch over absolute powerhouse Fresno State. They won it last year, and they were the preseason number one in the conference. And Utah State really cemented their spot right now on top of the conference, 8-3. The next team is New Mexico, who's 5-4. Utah State will see them in a few weeks.
It's kind of interesting with like softball, and it's also the same with a couple other the sports like tennis, like how not like surprising these years are, but like just kind of out of the ordinary. Both tennis and softball have just been kind of those sports where like they're here at Utah State, they sometimes do decent, but not like super well, and they're just flat out dominating this year. Softball especially, being 8-3. You said second team's 5-4. That's a game and a half advantage. I mean, right now you're looking at the way they've been playing, the way Kelly White's been playing as well. You talk about insurmountable leads. That could be one right there, to be honest.
I'm telling you, Kelly White, the thing about this team is not only are they really good, their best pitcher and their best hitter are both freshmen. And Kelly White, the pitcher, phenomenal. Unbelievable pitcher in... So another game, we neglected to talk about this because it wasn't as great of a game, but we lost to BYU on Wednesday. BYU's a top 25 team, so there's really no shame in that. But we couldn't stop the BYU offense. They were hitting everything that was thrown to them, and then we put in Kelly White, and she basically threw a no-hitter through half the game. I mean, just that freshman pitcher and the future of Utah State softball – program is in very good hands
as long as they stay. Yeah,
and then she pitched that entire 0-1 game that we won over Fresno. She pitched that game as well, and then in the second game she came in when we're down 0-4 and held them tight. Like, she came in with a 4-point deficit and then we won 7-4. Unbelievable. Now another thing about this that I think was kind of what you were talking about, where the team can just come out of nowhere, I think that a lot of this goes to the credit of head coach Steve Johnson. Steve Johnson took over in 2014, and prior to him coming in, here are a few records. The season before he came in, 11-43. Before that, 17-36. Before that, 15-42. Before that, 20-30. That was a good year. Before that, 10-37, 14-34, 17-36. I mean, you got to go all the 8-38, 8-40. You got to go all the way back to like the 80s, I believe, before we even have any, a 95 before we have a winning season. And then Steve Johnson comes in and slow progress year by year. Last year, 26-25. Now we're probably going to win the Mountain West Championship.
There's kind of like, I was kind of drawing a parallel there with the tennis team, and that's also just kind of a perfect parallel there. A couple years ago, tennis absolutely sucked. Winless in the Mountain West. Clancy Shields comes in and turns around the program, and they win a Mountain West regular season title last year. I kind of bring that up here because that's going to be the interesting thing for the future of Aggie softball. Is Steve Johnson is super important to that. Let's not act like Utah State's a destination school for softball. There's a real chance that he might leave soon, and they need some guy to come in after that, like tennis has with James Wilson this year, who's kind of just been carrying the torch a bit, to kind of be able to keep going further with that. It definitely helps to have Kelly White and Sam Arillo and all those, like, the freshmen that are like really carrying this team. But it's gonna be interesting to see that next couple of years, see if they're able to kind of take this year and kind of extend it beyond a coach if he leaves. I'm not saying that he is
there's a very good shot after the progress that he's made here. I mean, there's a lot of bigger schools that can pay much, much more than a Mountain West softball team. But I think that, like, in group of five, so to speak. I mean, I know we're not talking football, but the non-power conference, mid-major conference kind of schools, especially in Olympic sports, I just feel like so much of the team's successes come from coaches. Whereas, like, a group of five football team, I think, like, it's still very dependent on the coaches. We saw with, like, Gary Anderson to Matt Wells, but I think a little bit less so. I think a lot more is on the players. Whereas these, you know, you look at the Utah State gymnastics team, who you had about a decade of terrible, terrible teams. You bring in a good coach, boom, top 25.
I also kind of want to mention this, because this is something I've kind of found with, like, talking to some players and coaches for these teams. Utah State's not a destination school, like I said, for, like, the entire country. For a group of five, for Olympic sports, it kind of is.
Yeah.
For a group of five. Solely because
of... Or at least it's getting there.
It might actually already be there, not from success, but because of the facilities that we have here.
Mm-hmm.
I was, like, talking with James Wilson, the men's tennis coach, and he said, like, one of the biggest reasons he came here was is because he knew this could be a really good program because they had everything here. Like, the athletic department, the stuff that they give, like, tennis, softball, all these teams... Apart from, like, basketball and football, they get, like, three meals a week, like, unlimited snacks, like, state-of-the-art facilities. And that's just something a lot of other teams, like, even just in the Mountain West, don't have.
Yeah.
And you look at, like, everything they got. Alan Bishop is a terrific strength and conditioning coach, works with all the Olympic sports. I think that, from the very first bit of it, is one of the reasons why we've seen, like, a really huge leap in all these Olympic sports over the past couple of years, with gymnastics, with tennis, with softball. It's kind of fallen pretty well in line with us getting new strength and conditioning. What's the new facility called? I cannot think of the name right now.
Super nice, shiny weight room.
Yeah, super nice, shiny weight rooms.
Icon. It's built probably by Icon, or from Icon, gave him money for it.
It's probably the Huntsman super nice, shiny
weight room. I think it's Icon Performance Center.
Something. It's got a nice, nice name. Trevor, I think, knows it a little bit more than we do. But, like, we got that. They kind of devoted a lot more money to athletics. And that we're kind of seeing the benefits with a lot of those teams that we don't pay much attention to, but really benefit if they just give just a little bit more of attention to. I think that's a super underrated aspect of Utah State sports right now.
No, absolutely. I mean, right now, like, you take football. I mean, I get that, like, this is crazy because obviously these are the two biggest sports, but you take out football and men's basketball out of the mix, and Utah State is probably the most successful group of five school in the country. As far as all of the other programs. Yeah, I mean, if not, maybe there's two or three others up there with them. But just, I mean, unparalleled success on some of these. They've proven they're one of the very top group of five gymnastics programs, one of the very top group of five tennis, one of the very top softball. And
track and field is absolutely destroying right now.
Well, the only thing you could say about that is at least, for sure, the Mountain West and maybe even like the West of Mississippi. Could be one of those schools. Maybe there might be some teams east that are kind of just like that. But,
and I think this is like a kind of a bit of a tangent, and I'm not insinuating anything here, but conference realignment happens a lot. And the Mountain West, it's kind of one that's affected by it. And I'm not saying Utah State is going to go up to Power 5 because obviously we would need to be a good football school or a basketball school, and we're just not. But when a conference like Mountain West or like even like Conference USA's, AAC's, are looking at like a new school, it really helps, I think, if you have successful programs outside of football and basketball, because that not only says that you can be successful in a sport, but it shows that it's not just like a coach
that's
responsible for like a football team or basketball team. This is a university that can stand on its own.
To go along with what you're saying, I mean, obviously the Big 12 isn't calling tomorrow morning and saying, hey, we want the Aggies. Like, that's just ludicrous, and it's so far out there, and, like, just not even a thing that could happen. But let's say eventually down the road,
Boise State.
I'm not, like, predicting anything, but let's just say all of a sudden there's four power conferences, each of them have 20 teams or whatever, and then everybody else forms – you know, maybe there's like a top group of five conference, maybe like the AAC and the Mountain West combine or something like that. And it's still not a power conference or whatever, but Utah State would have to be in the mix, and something like that would help greatly.
Yeah, I mean, you look at right now the platform that I think we're on right now is probably similar to kind of other schools. Like Power Five, I would say maybe we're close to like Rutgers. But other group of five schools, as far as like a lot of sports, to be honest. But like outs for like group of five, I think we're pretty well close to like the Boise States of the world, or maybe like a Colorado State, Cincinnati, Houston. Granted, they have much better basketball programs or football programs than we do right now, which hopefully is going to turn around soon. But I think we're differentiated enough with the ones like Rice, or actually they actually have some really good Olympic program sports, but some of those smaller ones like
Toledo.
Yeah, I mean, maybe even much of the Mountain West.
We're able to boast a top 25 gymnastics team, a top 45 tennis team, a
probably getting close. Who knows to the top what softball is? And
track has had a couple All Americans over the past couple
women's
of years.
Women's basketball's on the rise.
Women's basketball, even men's basketball, for as much crap as we were giving it this year, it's on an upward trajectory. I think that's a really good. It's a really good position for Utah State in general, because we know there's going to be stuff happening in the next couple of years with conference alignment. We know somebody's going to probably like maybe take like Boise State or Big 12 might finally do something. Utah State needs some reason for a conference to look at it and be like, that is a quality school to have in our conference. Right now, football and basketball can't really give that to us currently, but everything else does.
And again, like, this is probably a tangent, and like, no conference is going to take us because we have a good track and field program or whatever, obviously. But I just think that this goes as a credit to John Hartwell, to Scott Barnes, to the university administration, that they've been able to put such good facilities out there that they can cultivate an athletics program with so many successful programs inside of itself. And football and basketball will come around eventually, hopefully. Maybe it'll be 40 years, but they'll come around.
And I think a lot of this, we should give some credit to Gary Anderson as well for this, because I remember him coming in, and one of the first things that really was happening that he was wanting to do was he wanted to transform the image of Utah State. And so one that involved the new logo, which is much better than the old one. Mm-hmm. We can all, I think, agree on that, apart from nostalgia, maybe.
And not only that, by changing the appearance of Utah State, he did get with Nike and did get that deal.
Yeah, got with Nike, got money there. He said, like, if we want to be a top school, we have to put money in, like a top school. And then we brought in, we got the new facilities. Not a new stadium, but a renovated stadium that looks really nice. Probably one of the best in the Mountain West. We talk about concessions being bad, but frankly, concessions are pretty decent. Like, they're at least getting better. I'd rather have Maverick Bonfire Grill than nothing.
What matters in something like this?
Hey, we got to at least mention it. We do that once a week. But I think that was like just kind of going back through the couple of years. We're all sad that some Aggie sports aren't performing well. As a whole, though, we're in a tremendous spot. We've said it before on this podcast. This is one of the best times to be an Aggie sports fan, if you ignore football and basketball. And while that's big things to ignore, it's true.
I guess just getting to the point of why I even started down this road, Utah State in like the mid-2000s and most of the 90s was dreadful in almost every Olympic sport.
The only thing we were good at was basketball.
Decades of awfulness.
And just men's basketball.
Yeah. Women's basketball, decades of just terrible play. Same with softball.
Decades of not even existing.
Same with, yeah, exactly. Just really, really very bad programs for Utah State through much of the 90s and the early 2000s, aside from like men's basketball and the occasional decent football year. But right now, every sport outside of football, and I mean, even men's basketball, you know, it's not like they're one of the worst teams in the country. They're at least in a medium spot and somewhat on the rise. There's so many good programs here at Utah State right now. And like, even then, I have to think that reflects well on the school and shows that there is a bright future for even the larger sports.
As of yesterday, Utah State men's track and field was number 56 in the nation.
Yeah, so even there, like, a sport like we don't even talk about that much on our podcast is still doing amazing.
Every spring sport, aside from women's tennis, I believe, top 50 in the country.
Yeah. And even women's tennis is having...
And they're still doing pretty well.
Like, they're exceeding expectations. And even football, like, again, we kind of piss on them a little bit. But even then, this was the first year in six that we didn't make a bowl game. So, I mean,
Yeah.
That's the grain of salt to take with the bitter.
Anyway.
Football. Anyway, we kind of got off topic there. Going back to tennis, it was kind of a sad week. Senior day definitely did not go the way the Aggies wanted to.
Which, and I'm not going to go off too much on this, but how stupid is it that somewhere like Utah State has, what, they still have four matches left, right, in the season? Yeah. And none of their last four are at home. How stupid is that? Because you can only play outside for like one or two matches of the season, that means.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't all the home matches be at the end of the season? I don't get it. Anyway.
Yeah, but the New Mexico game on Sunday, a new match, Aggies just never really had it. It was lost the doubles
point. Did it come down to the seventh point?
It kind of did. We lost the doubles point, and then courts 1, 2, and 3 started. Court 4, Samuel Serrano is frankly one of my favorite tennis players like ever, and he just destroyed. And so then we tied it up.
He could beat Federer, I think.
Honestly, I would not put it past him. On Samuel Serrano's best days, like, he's freaking amazing to watch. One of my favorite athletes here at Utah State. Pretty much the entire tennis team. Like, covering them has been awesome this year. But then Jaime Barrios had a really tough match with New Mexico's number one. A couple calls went against him, and he kind of let that get to him, I think. Kai, also number two, he was kind of not out. Played kind of out-hustled a little bit by New Mexico. And then Jack Swindells on the third court had a really long match. And then two other matches started and ended before his did. And he lost the second set 6-2 and was down like 5-1 in the third set. So we pretty much knew it was over, and the other two sets finished, and we had won those. So the 4-3 looks a little better than what it was kind of going to there. And Jackson Wells lost that match. I've never seen an Aggie player more devastated than him after that. Like, in tears for like 15 minutes. Like, had the entire team around him trying to console him. It was...
Yeah, tough go for the tennis team. But, I mean, they also picked up 3 wins. Just a ridiculous weekend where they had 4 games. So they went 3-1. Given the 3 that they won, they should have won. And they probably should have won on Sunday as well.
Yeah. And you could tell they were fatigued. Like, they never, yeah, like, none of them actually would, like,
you
admit to it.
You 4 matches in 4 days.
Yeah. There was a couple players that rested because of NCAA rules, but, like, Swindells played not only 4 singles matches, but also 4 doubles matches in 4 days. And it just, I don't know.
Even
scheduling
then, though,
quirks.
Even, you know, it was a disappointment, but even then, Utah State, 17-8 record on the season, which is far and away, like, not even close to the top record in the Mountain West. And then in Mountain West play, 3-1. Tied 3 ways on top. So, it sucks. It would have been nice for him to win that, and they'd be sitting on top alone and be the favorite here on out. But I still have to think that they got a really good shot to win the title.
They've got a really good shot, mainly because, I mean, you play Fresno State this week, they could pretty much eliminate Fresno from the championship discussion, for regular season at least, with a win there. And then New Mexico still has to go play UNLV, which has been a really tough game. That's Fresno lost like 4-1 this past week when they played UNLV. UNLV's freaking good, and we already beat them. So New Mexico can still trip up. We've got a pretty easy schedule going out after Fresno. We've got like Nevada and Boise State, which are all just kind of filler in the conference. So
yeah,
they got a good shot still at a conference title, and there's the tournament, which I know that they probably prefer that over the regular season title, because then that also gets them a berth in the NCAA.
That's really more important when it comes down to it, but might as well win them both. Shout out to tennis, man. That's awesome. I'm glad they're doing well. Just as we said, just the really dominant time in history for all Utah State sports outside of the Big Two. But shifting over to football.
Let's spend one quick second here. I just want to ask a question.
Okay.
Cross.
If this is about concessions, I'm going to kick you.
Second question. not really. Track and field, like we kind of just briefly mentioned that. Do you think they're in the kind of the same category as like tennis and softball are right now, like with dominance?
You know, I'm going to have to get back to you on that one.
Let's put it this way. Just this past weekend, down in Texas, there was an invitational. One of the Utah State Aggies won the 400 hurdles. He was also the fastest qualifier for the finals, so he had the preferred lane 5 in that 400-meter hurdles. you know, that's...
I did see a video about that on Twitter. I saw, like, the full race. Dude was hauling on the final stretch. Like, he covered so much ground. Like,
we got some fast dudes here at Utah State.
I just want to mention that just because, one, that video was impressive, and two, track and field deserves a little bit
of love. I'll tell you what. Yeah, we really haven't given them their due. Let's talk a little bit more track and field next week, because this weekend Trevor and I are both going to be at the track and field invitational that's here at Utah State. And so I'll brush up and do a little bit of research, and then
Maybe I'll stop by for like an hour out of the seven or something. Oh, just so I can
say that I was there
next week. Anyways, now we can go to football. Now that we've talked about every other sport that's doing absolutely amazing, we can talk about the sport that's actually doing the most amazing, because spring game.
Hey, listen, don't crap on the football team too much, because they got a win this weekend.
Yeah, they got a 56 points.
They won.
It wasn't even 56. It was like, I think it was like 74.
I about rushed the field because that's probably the only time we're going to win this whole season. No.
Hey, man, Idaho State.
I won't say that. But we were all three of us, we were at the spring game. Just right off the bat, we were lucky to have nice weather and for it to actually happen. But right off the bat, any like major takeaways from it?
DJ did some good holding.
DJ did do some good holding. I would also say the offense gave me a little bit of hope. Part of it might be just that I'm kind of getting far enough away from football season that I'm building some hope, but it looked a little bit different under Yost. There was a couple actually downfield throws involving the tight end a lot more. The hurry up, I think, I don't know why more teams don't just do hurry up, just because you can get some freebie flags and plays.
Well, look at how many offsides calls we had on our stupid offensive line last year anyway.
Yeah, so I mean, we're not losing anything with that. So I mean, that's probably the biggest thing. I mean, you can't really take anything away from a spring game, because it's so lax. It's just about like, hey, we're the football team and we still are alive in the spring. But that was the one thing I think you could take away.
You also have more of a vanilla playbook, because they don't show their main things. They don't want other teams coming in and
looking. Which makes it even more astounding, or not astounding, but good to see that the offense looked different, even with that vanilla toned down play calling and the fact that Yost has really only been like working with the offense for a couple weeks.
Yeah, the thing is, every time after the game, it's like, okay, was the offense really good, or was the defense really bad? Was the defense really good, or was the offensive really bad?
And we couldn't tell because they were so close in score this year, too.
I will say, I've been going to spring games for a long time at Utah State, and I don't think I can remember a single one where it was actually close. Like, usually the defense just wipes the offense, which, like, again, it's like, well, the offense, that's awesome. Maybe we have a good offense, or maybe the defense just sucks. But no, I'll agree with what you say, that one of the things you can take away is the play calling. Like, yeah, it's vanilla, and it's obviously going to be much different in a real game, but like, I love, and I'm glad you hit on this, because the biggest takeaway I saw was that we're actually using our tight end, who was Damian Hobbs, weirdly enough, and he looked good. So we had a lot of downfield passes to the tight end.
How do you see having like a bubble screen to Damian Hobbs passing to Tarver?
Long as you throw it sometime in there to DJ, I'm perfectly fine with that.
Well, and that's another thing about having guys like Hobbs is you can mix things up. You know, you have a more opportunity to do some crazy calls. And from everything I haven't met Yost yet. I haven't been able to talk to him or anything. But from everything I've read and from everything I've heard in interviews he's done, it sounds like he has absolute reign of this offense, and that he realizes – this offense really, really stunk last year, and it needs some major changes, and I think that he's going to implement some serious changes.
I think going on that, one of the things I also kind of, not a takeaway, I guess, but kind of a hope, Ken Myers, I think, looked somewhat good.
No, I'm with you, actually. I was pleasantly surprised by what Ken Myers did.
Throwing, he was still a little bit inconsistent, just because I think that's what he's going to be. He had that one, like, 70-yard run, which... in a spring game, that's impressive, because he didn't get touched. That
means. Yeah, really.
And I mean,
broke right through.
Yeah, and I was kind of talking with a friend of ours, Logan, about this. So I'm going to see kind of what you guys think about this. Ken's best year at Utah State was when he was playing for his job. I think we can all agree on that. Like, at least his freshman year or his sophomore year.
Freshman year.
Kind of both. He was, like, playing with that assumption. It's like, this isn't my job. Yeah. I have to play hard. I have to actually do stuff. And then last year, it was completely his job. And let's be honest, he kind of threw it away to the point where we were playing a now-converted tight end as our QB.
Yeah.
This year, I think it might be slightly different there just because you bring in Yost, who's going to have – you're going to have Jordan Love, who didn't look great in spring game, of course. You're going to have Columbia, that's they're going to probably be redshirting. I think he might have a little bit more incentive to be playing hard this year. What are the chances you guys think that we might see actually either a decent or to good year from Myers from what you saw in the spring game with the offense and everything going on there?
I'm partially with you in that – I do think that that's probably why he played so well and that last year he just looked too comfortable. Unfortunately, I don't know how much more competition he'll have this year because I was so unimpressed with Jordan Love and with DJ Nelson at the spring game. I hope that they use Columbia as, you know, like just let him know up front, we will pull this guy's red shirt if we need to. But to answer your question, I actually think that Kent Myers is going to do pretty well this year. I've been really harsh on him in last year. I think that a lot of the downfall of the team was in Kent Myers' hands. But I don't know. He looked totally different during the spring game. It was a spring game. I get it. But towards the end of the season, I also felt like he started to come around a little bit more. He started to figure out, okay, look, I'm going to get about 2 seconds behind this offensive line. I got to wing it off quick. I can't hold on to it. Can't get myself in trouble. And he started to figure that out. And I think the offensive line will probably be even worse this year, which isn't going to help. But he's going to be a senior. I think he'll kind of know how to deal with it.
And I think Yost's offense will alleviate some of that.
Absolutely.
More like a quick pass. But.
Yeah, well, and you know, say you've got a tight end who can just pop right out past the line. And, you know, maybe you've got 2 seconds to throw it, but then you've got a tight end just past the line who you can dump it off to. I agree that the play calling will make a big difference.
I kind of agree with you in some ways and disagree with you in some ways about the competition part. I agree we won't get any competition from DJ, but I kind of disagree on the Jordan Love part because on this spring game, it's not really you can't really do his factor of playing. He's more of a dual threat, and the spring game you can't really do a dual threat because I just go I tap you with two hands, okay, you're done. You can't You know it's so you couldn't really do his game. So I believe that Hill will be more of a competition underneath him. And now that we're not redshirting him, he doesn't have a red shirt left, then you also just go, you know what? Get in there, Love. Go shoot, go play for your
no,
play for the job.
Right I'm there. With you there, and I think I probably, you know, maybe I was a little bit too brutal on Jordan Love after just one spring game performance. But just, like, his arm is what I was mostly referring to. And you could be right. Maybe, you know, maybe he will put the pressure on.
It could be. And then it might have also just been an off day. We'll see.
You never
I mean,
know.
That's the first time he's really also played in front of anybody. Like,
yeah.
And granted, there wasn't a whole lot of people there, but I mean,
about as many as his high school games.
Yeah.
At least we didn't get the rain till like the last minute and a half.
No, I mean, it literally like rained like right after the game was over, so it was great.
Yeah, it was nice timing, but I mean, one of the things also I saw there was like from the athletics department, they kind of like did a feature somewhat on Yost. It was the first really kind of like in-depth kind of look I've gotten about him at Utah State. And that's where he mentioned, like, it's been a lot of, like, recruiting and stuff when he first got here. So he's only had a couple weeks with the offense. One thing I was really impressed with, though, is, like, maybe not impressed, and of course he's going to talk up his players, but he mentioned just, like, how much film and study Kent Myers has actually been doing in the offseason. And I'm kind of formulating a theory here. I think a lot of the talk from everybody last year, I think a lot of that might have gotten to Kent Myers. Like, things started to go south beginning of the season, and I think a lot of people, rightfully so or not, were pointing the finger at Kent Myers.
Well, he's a very conscious dude. I mean, he's not, you know, some of these guys, they never touch social media. They, you know, they're the type that would probably never listen to a radio show about, you know, talking Utah State. I feel like, and I'm not saying this is a bad thing, I feel like Kent Myers is very conscious of those kind of things. And so, yeah, you very well could be right.
And, I mean, it wasn't that hard to even find somebody somewhere being like, you know what, this is not working out. He's just playing terribly. That wasn't that difficult to find last year. We we're saying it all the time on Twitter. There, I think there's a non-zero chance, at least, that he kind of took those in the offseason and is just like, you know what, I'm actually going to – he's going to get the motivation to actually go and play well next year.
So
that's, I think, where I think maybe Myers has a really good season, is he just kind of wants to show everybody, hey, that quarterback you guys saw freshman year, a little bit of sophomore year, where I looked like I was going to be the next star of Utah State football, I can be that guy.
And it's his senior year, you know, maybe you got to figure he's got nothing to lose.
So you're disagreeing with the water girl that criticized everybody for talking bad on the players last year?
I went on a rant on her, like not to her, but on Twitter, just about those people. Kind of another side tangent. We're going to get along, so we're going to wrap this up soon. But complaining about your team is not an issue, I think. It's when people are like, you should not complain. I think that's the issue.
Yeah.
For me with Utah State, it's
fine to complain.
If they're not doing well, they're not putting forth what I believe Utah State is capable of. So not complain about that. To me, it says you're fine with mediocrity. You're fine with Pow City or whatever. So, I mean, that's my two cents. I think we might see an improvement this year, though, from that.
Overall, spring game, again, like how much can you really take from it? But in like really defensively, I have absolutely zero takeaways. I feel like that's where you see the least is the defense. You just don't get anything out of it.
I did see, I will say one thing, there was a bit of a ball hawking attitude, I think, with the defense. They swarmed a little bit better than I saw last year, and they had two interceptions. Granted, one of them was right to them, but I mean, that's the only takeaway, I think.
Yeah, this was sort of what I was getting to, is that I do feel like on the field, maybe there's really not a ton to take away, but we were sitting just the very front row in the blue seats, right behind the defense, and I feel like there was as much, and last year we sat behind the defense at every single game, sometimes the offense, but I felt like there was as much intensity at the spring game, probably more intensity at the spring game than we saw in any of last year's games. Like last year, the team on the sideline just looked dead.
Yes.
Yep. I mean, after plays, everybody was go sit on the bench, put their heads down, don't talk. Maybe watch the game for a few of them, but like this. At the spring game, at least there was a lot of fire on the sidelines. And you know, maybe there's a culture change. Maybe there's been some maybe it's new coaching staff. Maybe it's seniors stepping up. I don't know. But there was at least intensity.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things I think we were missing a lot last year. We kind of mentioned that occasion or two, this team doesn't have a killer instinct. And we were talking a little bit before the show. We had four games, which we should have either won or were cheated out of a win, however you want to look at that. Air Force, New Mexico, Nevada, and Colorado State. So, I mean, it's not like we were had fallen completely off the
cliff. I would say four games where we were in a position where, had a couple of things gone different, we could have won. Because
yeah,
a couple of those were just our own stupidity as well.
Yeah, a couple of those were us making like a bad mistake, like Nevada. And Colorado State, I mean, that was just a bad, bad half.
Absolute stupidity.
But, I mean, the ability was there for us to possibly make it to a bowl game, even be within contention in the Mountain West, in the division there. I mean, we're not in a like massive hole to dig out of. It's not that deep. It's still a hole, but I think there's some optimism to be had. That's the purpose of the spring game, I think, is just to make people a little bit optimistic for the coming year. I think it did that. In 6 months' time, we'll actually find out if that's actually true. But that's my takeaway.
And we really can't get much worse. So that means we're probably going to get better.
Three games that we could get worse.
I think the spectrum here, and there's a really good SB Nation article, I think. I mean, maybe not really good, but it at least goes in depth on Utah State football and what next year could be. They call us the wild card in Mount West, so take that for what it's worth. But I think the spectrum for next year, I think Idaho State is a, that should be an automatic win. I think we probably can get three or four other wins on the schedule. So I think our window is probably about 5-7 to maybe 7-5. I don't think we're going to go above that by any means. I'm also not sure if, well, we could go below that, but I'm not sure we're going to go far below that.
But I'm not ready to make my picks.
Neither am I, but I'm just speaking out of my mouth like it's my butt. So,
as per usual.
Yep. And with that,
that's what we do here on Section 119.
Unless anybody else wants to speak out of their butt,
microphone, and
does anybody else want to do so?
Hold on. No, I'm good.
Well, looking at the schedule, this should be a easier schedule than last year. So,
once we get into the conference, yeah, I think so. Wisconsin, Wake Forest are automatic losses in my mind right now. But
Wake Forest isn't as...
I'm literally just not even ready to look at this at all. We still have 142 days.
I'm ready to look, man. I'm sick of no football.
Let's look at the spring game first.
We looked at the spring game. We're going undefeated. Anyways, this is Section 119 Sports. This has been a talk show about Aggie sports.
It has been a show.
It's definitely been a show. We'll peace out, and we'll be back next week talking something. I'm not sure what we'll talk about next week. Probably some softball. That's about all that we've got going right now.
I don't think they saw you salute them out, so I'll tell them you did.
I saluted them.
Rudy Gobert does it better.
He probably does. Anyways, this week, not much at home. We got some track going on throughout the weekend, and we got women's tennis plays Idaho on Sunday. Apart from that, gymnastics is on the road. Men's tennis is on the road.
Gymnastics is finished.
Softball is on the road. The other team that we've got that is full of women that I would very much like to date. That's pretty much all we got on the calendar.
Goodbye.
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 Adios.